With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom or a maternal figure in your life? Let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you want to ask. Then she can either type up her response or record her voice. And MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. I want to know about the stories of how my mom and dad grew up. What's the first thing they remember after they were born? That's one of the questions I sent to my dad after signing up for My Life in a Book. And I can't think of a greater gift to give my dad in sharing his stories and to receive. It's super easy to use. My favorite part of it, as someone who sometimes lives on turtle time and forgets about sending or receiving email, is that they reach out a couple days prior to sending questions, just so I know of what questions they're going to send to my dad, if I want to change it for another question or customize it with something that I want to know. It's that kind of specificity and care that I love so much. This is genuinely an incredible, incredible gift. There's no greater present than I could give a family member or a loved one than to participate in this kind of meaningful appreciation for the entirety of their lives, separate from my own. Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code AndysGirls at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom or loved one this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com. with code AndysGirls for 10% off today. And thank the Jills Aaron and your life and mine. Conversations around wellness and weight loss can be complicated. There's the Instagram filter we all see on IG and social media, and then IRL. And between $20 smoothies and daily ice baths, everyone is doing the most to hack the health system. But there's a better way. Row. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Over 200,000 people have already chosen Row to help them lose weight. And you can sign up from the comfort of your own home. No scheduling a doctor's appointment, commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. The Row Body Program pairs a weekly shot with healthy lifestyle changes so you can lose 15 to 20% of your weight in a year on average and actually keep it off. Of course, medication must be paired with diet and exercise modifications in order to achieve any stated results. Medication cost is not included in the program. Patients must pay for medication separately. With Row, average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to row.co/AndysGirls. You can sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/AndysGirls. Sign up today. Much like a rose in bloom, you can't pick beauty without a few thorns.
I'm living in Brooklyn, and you're in high school.
You know what? I love a New York throwback because it makes me think of the better times. And yeah. That is the energy that is needed
maybe in this city, but also in the minds of many Bravoholics. You guys, it's Andy's Girls. It's episode 245. Holy fucking shit. Wow. And I'm so excited to be joined by one of my absolute favorite guests on the People's Couch. You know her as writer, producer, host of the podcast Pot Psychology, and dragger of all things bees. My God, talk about a little bit of a singer stinger. I love to see her. And thanks so much for coming back on the show, Tracy Morrissey. How
Thank
are
you? For having
you?
Me. I'm good. You know, it's soaking wet outside, but I'm good.
I have been stuck in my fucking apartment all weekend because I had to rest after getting the third dose of the vax. And then we had like a hurricane or something yesterday. People were asking me and I was like, honestly, I haven't looked outside, but like that's what
it was. Just
a
lot of rain. It wasn't even a lot of wind. It was just tons and tons of rain. It's still raining. My dog refuses to go outside in the rain. So she has not pooped in like 2 days. So I'm a little concerned about her, but she seems all right.
I mean, it happens. Listen, not to get personal, but sometimes it happens. Is it rain? I'm like looking out my window now. It looks okay right now, but I think it's supposed to rain a little bit. This is
this is the
EG weather on the ones right now, guys. From Brooklyn to the Upper East Side, we've got you covered. So listen, how are you? How's Pot Psychology? How are things going?
It's good. Everything is good. My latest celebrity investigation happened accidentally, but it's on the most recent episode of Pot Psychology. We realized totally by accident that Matthew McConaughey has been changing and evolving his origin story of All Right, All Right, All Right, and giving wildly different details over the course of the last like 7 or 8 years. So
because of Dazed and Confused? Or am I getting that completely wrong?
Yeah. No, it was from Dazed and Confused. It was the first thing he ever said in a film. Like, it was his first film job. It was ad-libbed. And he has told... I mean, I heard him first tell the story because I listened to his audiobook, Green Lights, which I highly recommend. It's really, it's weird. It's weird. It's weird enough to be really good. He tells a story about like his father giving mouth-to-mouth resuscitation to his parrot and it working. And he seems like he tells a lot of tall tales just from that book, it seemed like to me. So then we were like listening to my friend, my co-host Rich was listening to a Public Enemy song where they say all right, all right, in the same kind of cadence as Matthew McConaughey. And he was like, I wonder if Matthew McConaughey got that from this song. And then we Googled like origin stories and we just started watching him on a bunch of different talk shows and gives a different story. Like it has evolved over the years. Like at first he said he was listening to The Doors and they say it in one of their songs. And then he was saying that he was listening to Ted Nugent and it has just changed. I think he's just a good storyteller, but he just peppers it with different details and it's sort of taken on a life of its own over the last few years. So you know, I think it's interesting. I don't know maybe it's just because he smoked too much pot and he doesn't remember, you know. Might be burnout. I mean, that's possible.
Totally possible. Do you think it also has something to do with the fact that he like maybe is genuinely considering a run for governor of Texas? And he wants to, like, make it into more of an inspiration narrative?
I mean, maybe. I mean, I think he just, I think it was, like, his prep for, like, trying to be on Inside the Actors Studio. Because it's, like, all about, you know, him, like, thinking about the process and who is his character and getting into the character's mind. But it's just weird because the details just, like, keep changing over the years. I thought it was kind of interesting. I don't think there was anything nefarious about it. I just think he's just a little bit sloppy.
I mean, sidebar, I miss Inside the Actor's Studio so much. That was like, that was Inside the Actor's Studio, the it factor. That was like genuinely prestige TV for Bravo. And I don't think they could ever do it again because James Lipton unfortunately passed away. And yeah. They tried with fucking Alec Baldwin, which is a wild ass pick.
Just because of the way he talks. I think. And his speech.
I don't know that he's a great. I don't know that the person who should be leading it should be a name, let alone an actor. I think it should be someone similar to teacher, like James Lipton. Yeah, a teacher or someone affiliated with the Actor's Studio, or because the Actor's Studio, it's like a part of Fordham or something now. I forget. Sorry, guys. But I think it should be someone that actors respect. No disrespect to Alec Baldwin, who's like living his best life, but or a life, someone's life, the life Ilaria has decided is his destiny. But yeah, I think that they went like super. I was actually supposed to go to the first taping of the Alec Baldwin reboot, and I canceled day of because I was just not in the mood. I wasn't feeling it. Listen, Tracy, we have so much to talk about. We have so much to discuss. I mean, need to get your thoughts first and foremost on Potomac. Last night's episode
was really a triumph. Good. Great.
A masterpiece.
Yeah.
Tell me.
Calling Giselle out on her shit that's not Karen, you know, because like Giselle tries to make it seem like, you know, because Karen says shit to her that it's just, you know, because Karen is unhappy in her life and her man doesn't love her and blah, 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 blah. And now that, like, you know, she has Wendy, who actually verbally can attack her in a way that Giselle won't be able to, like, swat off. So, but I think that Wendy's right. I mean, and Wendy, you know, is pissed because they're bringing it up on the show. Like, that's, like, the main thing, that the affair or the alleged affair, the rumor, they're like, you know, bringing it up for like a storyline. And she's told, like, that's exactly what Giselle is doing, because Giselle has no storyline to offer of her own, really, because she doesn't want to be. Well, do you think that she was lying about like, do you think it was all bullshit when she was getting back with Jamal, or do you think that was real?
I can't figure it out, because the ways that she was avoiding even answering the question of are you guys still together shows me a little snippet of like the humiliation that she must feel. Like, I wonder if Giselle is more heartbroken about this not working out in whatever form, professionally or romantically, or heartbroken because maybe Karen was right. But regardless, I find it odd that she would utilize, not new, that she would normalize this relationship with her daughters if it wasn't real, because I feel like there's so much risk involved.
Yeah, that's
with
true.
Your kids, that it's surprising to me, but maybe they had an arrangement. And I sort of also can't believe it's real, because it's hard for me to believe that she's that stupid, genuinely. But like, look at Khloe Kardashian. So I don't know. It seems it's so obvious that he's not a worthy partner.
Yeah.
But they were together in the sense that that's the dynamic we were watching play out on TV. I don't know. What do you think? Do you think it was real?
I think that it was half and half. I think that, like, it wasn't real for him. And I think it wasn't really real for her. But I think that she was okay enough for it to be fake. Like, I think that, like, you know, the idea of like having their family intact and back together was probably attractive to her, and that's probably why she was like telling her daughters, well, he's going to be around more and blah blah blah. But I think that they weren't, I don't think they had like this deep connection, because just the way that Robin reacted to it, and Robin actually likes her. And Robin was like, yeah, I wasn't surprised that ended. No. So, and Robin is someone who got back together with her ex. So, you know, I am torn too. But I think that it was an arrangement between them for maybe him to get some money to make appearances on the show. And I think maybe she was hoping that he would move back in with them.
it is so fascinating to watch her shoot down any conversation topic revolving around her quote unquote real relationship as presented on the show. She won't even say whether or not they're definitively still together or broken up. And yet her expectations for Wendy, like weaponizing the ways that Wendy is celebrating her body or maybe acting in a way that is different from how she did last year, whatever it is, her expectation of vulnerability when it's all being weaponized, because the narrative that Giselle is presenting is like, these things are happening because there's trouble in your marriage, or these things are happening because you're related, you're reacting to rumors about something negative happening in your marriage. Her expectation for Wendy to discuss what, if true, would be incredibly vulnerable information. And yet Giselle won't even say if she's still with Jamal is just such a fascinating divide.
She's just such an, she's just like evil for no reason. You know what I mean? Like, she's just like, she reminds me of, you know, in The Simpsons, Reverend Lovejoy, his wife is like a total bitch and always says like nasty shit to Marge. But, you know, you expect the Reverend's wife to be, you know, very Christian-like or very super nice and empathetic. And that's Giselle.
She is not. I don't know. It's something that Wendy said, and I forget the language used, but like Giselle doesn't seem to have an it's not even capacity. Giselle doesn't seem to have an understanding of what empathy looks like. Like the ways that she was speaking to Robin, I'm thinking to myself, let this woman communicate if she's feeling pain. Stop trying to shame her into doing better. And I know that Giselle thinks it's coming from a good place, but like, what is your record of success with this? Did someone do this to you over and over and you just thought this was the method or the mode? Because it's not, this is not it. Just shaming her and being like, you need to do better because your company is going to explode and your fiance, ex-husband's going to leave you. That doesn't get someone out of bed. That doesn't get someone out the door.
I mean, I think that everything that Giselle said was the truth, but this is not like, you're right. It's like not how you cure depression. I mean, it's very, very clear that Robin is depressed. I don't think it's just seasonal depression. I think maybe she's a little bit ashamed to admit that she might have that she has depression. Like, you don't go back to bed, you know, like if you're not depressed in the morning, you know, like getting out of bed and like doing the one thing you have to do at the last minute and then getting back in bed, that's depression. So I think that she probably has been depressed for quite a while because of the money thing and the wand thing. And there were like things that that like buoyed her in the meantime, like, you know, being on this show or, you know, Juan moving back in with them. But I think when COVID happened, and I think this happened for a lot of people, the sadness that they had underneath the like facade, when you no longer had to put on that facade anymore because you weren't really like seeing people, the sadness just completely overtook people. So I think that that's something that has happened to her. And she's like, not like, it doesn't seem like she's getting like the help that she needs to get.
I mean, I don't know from a like diagnostics perspective what it is. She's discussed on social since last week's ep aired that she is looking into a diagnosis of ADHD. She also mentioned on the show that she thinks that she's dealing with PTSD, which I could 1,000% see happening and being triggered by the pandemic, feeling like you're alone, feeling like you're dealing with unexpected loss and pain, and how, you know, Robin is at this point now where it's like she has a business that's taking off. She remembers what happened the last time she had it all. And it feels to me like she's afraid of getting to the next level because she would maybe just be holding her breath, waiting for it to be unexpectedly taken away. And I could see all of that being triggered by the pandemic. I could also see it happening regardless of the pandemic. And it's just so interesting to hear, like, Robin say these things that are, talk about vulnerability, incredibly vulnerable. And Giselle, who has business experience, but not maybe, I mean, like, you can learn from your mistakes. Like, I thought Every Hue was a fucking great idea, but we haven't seen it in a while. It feels to me like Robin is looking for maybe a life coach, maybe something else, maybe a friend. And I just don't know what skill set Giselle has in which to, like, deliver on any of those levels.
Yeah, no. She's not a comforting kind of person.
And yet she's been given the benefit of grace, sometimes because she's, like, sort of LVP style. She's so good at this that, you know, doing the machinations behind the scenes or whatever it is, guiding people into having certain discussions, bringing stuff, you know, in front of the cameras or whatever else, where people get caught up in the chaos and not the person who, like, lit the match. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to watch Ashley navigate Giselle, because it feels like Ashley is giving every benefit of the doubt to Giselle, to the extent that she's even telling Wendy, like, oh, that didn't happen in that way, about a conversation that Ashley
she wasn't there for.
was not even in the same state at that point. And Ashley is such a smart person. How do you process that? How do you process her just sort of devotion to or alliance with Giselle?
Well, I guess, I don't know. I mean, because she still has, like, issues with Candace. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I think also, when after you have a baby, you're just, like, nicer to everyone. And it seems like Giselle has really laid it on to, like, reach out to Ashley and be, like, comforting. Mm-hmm. And they did talk about, you know, how they pooped when they delivered, and that is, like, a bonding experience. So I think maybe that's, like, part of it. And she doesn't know Wendy as well. And Wendy did, like, go hard on Monique without really knowing Monique very well. So, and, you know, Ashley's really close with Monique. So it might just be some other kind of, like, bullshit in the background. But I do think that Ashley, like, I think that Giselle was right that Ashley would be the person to talk to Wendy about that stuff, because she has experienced those sorts of things. And the things about Michael have been true.
I mean, the things about Jamal have been true.
Oh, they
right?
Are. Oh, Jamal. I meant Eddie. Like, I don't believe the Eddie stuff. Do you believe the Eddie stuff?
Oh, not even for a single second. Yeah. Eddie, to me, gives off huge Jonathan Schindler vibes, big Evan vibes. I see him as a guy who is a genuinely caring and supportive spouse. He seems as
close Jonathan
to, like,
Schindler, like Schindler's List?
Heather Thompson.
No.
No.
Oh.
Ramona's ears just perked. No, I meant that in terms of that happens to be Heather Thompson's husband.
Okay, I did not remember his name. That's
hashtag
a deep
never
cut.
Forget. No, that is, I mean, I think about him all the time. Jonathan Schindler is one of my favorite husbands of all time, house husbands of all time. Yeah, I don't think for a single second, but I think that it is obviously Wendy understands the ways that rumors can be manipulated and stretched, and she doesn't want her husband involved in that. Like, it's probably bad enough that someone is spreading this shit.
It's one thing when it's online. It's different when it goes on TV. Right. It has a whole other run, you know?
And I think that Giselle understands that, which is why...
Absolutely.
Like, does Ashley really make sense to be the one to discuss this? Because I don't think Ashley would have discussed it on camera had she not been told about it on camera by Giselle. Like, why isn't Giselle talking about all of the Jamal stuff that's happened. Like, why are we?
Because she's deflecting big time. It's just like she's been trying to get the Eddie stuff on. Like, she's been trying to get it to be a storyline for at least 3 episodes now. She's mentioned it several times. And now it's like finally, you know, the seeds that she's planted have bloomed.
Mm. And here we are. I mean, I don't know that she understood what was coming her way, but it's not going to stop or slow down anytime soon. Like, Giselle's a little bit fucked now. Like, I would not want Wendy to be looking at me the way she is at Giselle, because Wendy can do this. Wendy can do this in ways that Monique cannot or could not.
Yeah. Yes.
And yeah, right. Like, and the Karen stuff, it's like, yeah, Karen is going to double down on this. Like, Karen is going to support Wendy in every possible way. And it might be because she's genuinely disgusted. It might also be because she can see, like, this could end Giselle. Not like getting her off the show, but just absolutely
drag her.
Dragging her.
I thought, like, when Karen was talking to Wendy in the last episode, before this one, that was an example of someone being like empathetic and compassionate to a friend. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, she was really like supportive and nice and was like, don't wear that outfit. Like, why are you dressing for her? I think that, and I don't think she had an ulterior motive with that. I think that she, well, at least I don't think so. I think Karen is a little bit more led by emotion, you know, than her gut. Giselle, I feel like, plays chess pieces in her head. I don't know if Karen does that so much. I think Karen is more in the moment. But who knows?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Karen's more instinctive. And I also think, regardless of whether or not she was thinking about it hurting Giselle in the long run, it would. Like, Karen happens to be right on the money here. And so it doesn't hurt that she's also like, this could maybe be weaponized against Giselle at a later point, because I do think she meant well in the moment. Yeah. And I also think, like, this season is the end result of several seasons of simmering tension between Giselle and Karen. And it's so fascinating that it's like coming to a head, but not necessarily through Karen herself. Like, it's coming to a head because I feel like people are saying, sort of similar to what happened with the LVP Raider Online thing, where it's like, okay, this is going to be the thing. You might have thought that you were doing this with good intentions, but you still did it. And we are going to now bring up everything else. And it's just going to be interesting to me. For some reason, I'm focused on the Ashley of it all. And that might have something to do with Ashley and Candace, just to the extent of, like, the ways that Ashley and Candace are going to react to this, seemingly diametrically opposed, maybe, but like maybe not. It's fascinating.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like Candace is almost never, I'm almost never on her side. Mm. Although I did agree with her that if there was the fashion police, Giselle would be locked up for life.
Under the
that
nail.
That was great.
She said,
yeah.
Under the nail. Fantastic. Yeah, Candace is having a good season so far, I have to say. She's going to ruin it. She always does. But she's having a really strong... Her responses to things in the moment are hilarious.
She's been really funny, yeah.
The moment of, like, why did you say... She's like, crackers? Wendy was like, Robin, you're drunk. Shut the fuck up. I just think it was, you know, a fantastic episode for Potomac. I mean, all in all, I feel
bad about...
And
no one's really come for Robin like that before either. Robin has just been able to skate by this whole time. And, well, Monique did one time, I guess. But with the umbrella, right? Weren't they, like, didn't they, like, get in each other's faces or something a couple years ago?
Yeah, and but, you don't want Juan Dixon to be here right now or whatever the line was.
Yeah, but, like, no one really came. I mean, Wendy came hard at Robin. And, you know, Robin, I think that she's kind of, like, right on the money. I think that Robin, you know, as... She was telling it. I think Robin has issues with depression and she's really super unhappy. I think Giselle is also really super unhappy. And they are just projecting on other people and like lashing out and trying to like spread their misery.
Do you think that their power dynamic could ever be separated? I mean, they are so united together. Is that just kind of like a lifelong penguin style mating for life situation? Are they
just bonded together
at this point?
And it's actually like really unique to Housewives because I've noticed over the years that when these like really, really tight friendships mm-hmm. are on the show, they last for two seasons. You get two mm-hmm. seasons of tight friendship and on the third, it blows up. Like Jill and mm-hmm. Bethany, Carol and Bethany, Gretchen
LVP
and Tamara.
Kyle, yes. Brandy and Stephanie. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So you get these like, although I think Brandy and Stephanie, they're also together forever. They had a bump in the road for them. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like totally like, you know, friendship or relationship ending. And so I think that I think it's really unique, Robin and Giselle's relationship, because I don't think they're going to, I don't think they're going to, unless Giselle just does something. It would be Giselle. Giselle would have to do something really crazy and then for Robin to get real pissed, because I don't think Robin would ever do anything to piss off Giselle.
I mean, I think it would have to involve Juan, but I don't know that she said anything to Robin about Juan. I don't know that she could get any more explicit than she has, unless it's some sort of rumors thing. But honestly, if Robin is hearing it through Giselle, she's going to process it differently than if she hears mm-hmm. it from anybody else, because there's such a foundation of like trust and like, if you cross the line, I'm going to move it for you. So yeah. I don't know how it could happen, but that would be fascinating. I don't know how it could happen, and it's definitely not going to be this season, but that would be fucking fascinating. It would someone would have to be desperate. Giselle would be having to come she would have to come from a place of such desperation in which to make that move, because once you make it, you can't go back. But
yes,
I would die to see it. Great TV. Listen, speaking of great TV, I need to shift gears a little bit, because Beverly Hills, Jesus fucking Christ.
Great. It has been great.
Have you changed your mind at all, or has your perception shifted at all having followed the Erica Jane in real time as these episodes have come out? Is there anything that's been surprising to you?
No, I think she absolutely knew what was going on.
Oh, there we go. All right.
And there's a couple of tells for me. See, all right. I don't know if you remember this. I did remind you about it before, but I think you don't remember. But when
never do. You know this, Tracy. I never
when
remember.
We were at BravoCon 2 years ago, and I was like, we were walking from one event to the other, and I was like, you know, everyone's talking about Dorit, but it's Erica that's going to have the real crazy problems. Like, something big is coming for them. And that happened. And so mm-hmm. I knew that 2 years ago. She certainly knew that 2 years ago, because she actually had inside information was being served with these lawsuits. You know what I mean? So even if she didn't know up to that point, she would have known by that point, you know, by 2 years ago, being served with the lawsuits. You know, you do a little bit of digging. Here's the other tell. She said that she only had credit cards. She doesn't know how to do a bank situation. She doesn't know about ATM cards. She doesn't know how to do that. Yeah. And that, to me, was the biggest crock of bullshit. She was a single mom until she was 28 years old and had that baby when she was like 20. She's a plucky stripper that made it in Hollywood. She knows how to fucking get money out of an ATM. She knows how to get money out of old men and ATMs. She knows how to get cash. So that was bullshit. That was like some, like, she can't play this like poor little, she can't do the Teresa Giudice defense. And I 100% believe that Teresa didn't really know what was going on.
Totally.
Because it's a different culture. It's a totally different culture. And I would maybe if Erica had married Tom out of college and never had, then I might believe like, oh, okay, she has no world experience. But she lived in New York City for like 10 years. She has experience. She knows how to take care of herself. So that was a lie. The other thing that was a lie was when she showed up to go on like some hike with Kyle or have a talk with Kyle. Kyle, it was a really sunny day. Kyle was wearing sunglasses. Erica came with no sunglasses on. And then when she started crying, her makeup was running all over her face. Her makeup has never ran. Her makeup has been perfect every single episode of her time on Beverly Hills. You know that they only put waterproof mascara on her. So that was intentional. That was totally planned. So those are some of my tells that I think that, you know. And then also the story with the like car crash. Why was that so weird? Like, that was really weird, right? When she was telling that story, like, why are you telling this story all of a sudden? And he was laying there for 12 hours and no one found him. Like, what are you, like, what? So that to me was like her, like, trying to feed into this theory that Tom is mentally incapacitated or whatever. But
yeah,
I'm sure you watched The Housewife and The Hustler or whatever it was called, right?
Yeah. Definitely.
And you go into those victim stories, which is what was so great about that that little mini doc, was that it was all about the victims and and what they did and what Tom, you know, is alleged to have done, and the like leaving all those voicemails where he's like very clearly lying and he got caught in these lies. That's been going on for 10 or 12 years. So it's not like all of a sudden after this accident 3 years ago, he had forgotten things. Plus, in California, when you have an LLC of money in an LLC, you can't be sued. Like, personally, they cannot take your money from your LLC because that's your business. So he knew exactly what he was doing when he was transferring that money into her LLC.
Well, is it with an LLC? Because I remember having this conversation with my accountant with my bank, where I do have a debit card because I have a terrible credit. But I remember there being a conversation of like opening an LLC because, and this is in New York, like if you were to in any way and have litigation serve, the point is that it's limited liability so that they can't come after your personal assets. It's the structure of it is such that a person could only come after, I think, your business assets, but I don't know if that's accurate.
Well, if they're suing, if something was wrong with your business, like if your business did something, say like you said something, say, you know, because we're talking shit about Erica, she wants to sue you. They can only go after the LLC. They can't go after you personally. So now they're being sued civilly, like personally. They're not suing the business, although they did mention like, oh, well, that they were hiding the money here. And that's why they're doing, like when Sutton was talking about forensics, like, yeah, they're doing like financial forensics and it's like not looking good for them. They're going to be able to trace where the money went eventually, unless it's like in the Cayman Islands or something like that. But I think that, you know, Erica, my personal theory, this is totally just supposition. I have no idea if any of this is correct. This is just my personal theory. I think she found out he was stepping out on her with like other ladies and paying for their plastic surgery and shit like that 10 years ago. She found that out and then had made an agreement with him where they would stay married, but then he would have to start funding her career and her dreams and aspirations. And then she would look the other way. And I think that that's like why a lot of that money was funneled to her, and it was like for her career to take off. And I think that they're not too far off the mark when they mention that in the lawsuits, that he misused this money on her like pop music career. I think that that's probably very close to the truth, in my opinion.
When she says repeatedly, if he took all of that money, I'd like to know where it is. How much of a level of complicity, if at all, do you think that she shares in the spreading of a narrative that there is a bucket of, if he stole the money, there is a bucket of cash somewhere where people are going to find tens of millions of dollars, as opposed to the idea that you are wearing it, you are traveling in it, you are driving in it? Do you think that she is purposefully not connecting the dots, or does she not understand?
No, I think that she's smart. and she's just playing a part right now. She's not stupid. She didn't get where she is today because she is a dope, you know? She knows what's going on. She knows what's going on. And when she said that, you know, oh, it's the victims that matter, it's like, okay, well then why don't you pay them out of the big chunk of money you have in your LLC if you really believe that? But I also think that in her heart, she believes she earned that money, you know?
Yeah.
And I will say that, like, if I had to suck, like, a 80-year-old man's dick, I would think I earned every fucking penny of that money, too.
First off, that's completely against my faith as a Jewish woman. So for religious reasons, I decline to answer. The idea that she feels like she deserves this or worked for it, I do understand in the sense that, like, she became, you know, she started her pop career well before Housewives, but became very famous as a pop icon and a housewife because of Beverly Hills, and probably believes that she deserves, it's like the idea of divorce, of like a divorce, a contentious divorce of like, you're not supposed to live, what is it? Like, you're not supposed to live below the lifestyle to which you've become accustomed or something.
Yeah.
Like, I think she maybe thinks that she deserves to live the life that she was accustomed to. The problem is that life was like supported and enabled by direct and longstanding theft. And I don't know that anyone aside from Sutton and Garcelle and maybe Crystal has connected the dots in real time as we have to the idea that everyone is focused on if she knew, which is a good question, but not the only question. The second part of that is, were you helped by this? Did you enable it? And have you, at the end of the day, benefited from it?
Yeah,
and
I mean, that's
don't
undeniable.
Know how she could say no. I don't think she would say yes because she wouldn't want to feel like she was being looked at as complicit. But babe, like, I don't know if the Chagalls, I mean, she didn't even want the Chagall, but like that Panther ring, it's fucking purring like a kitten right now.
Why
how
the
could
fuck
you say
was
you
Tom
weren't?
Buying a Chagall? What was it, 2 years ago or something? Why
yeah,
the
I think it
fuck
was
he...
Chicago or an anniversary. It's because he wanted
it. Was
it.
Their she anniversary. Said... I know, but like, he must have known at that point that they were so up to their eyeballs. I mean, he was taking out crazy loans. So why would he do that? Was he trying to like flip it? Was he trying to like buy it as an investment and try to like turn it over and, you know, sell it for much more money to like try to like, you know, cover his ass or something? Like, it's just wild. Is he still in the house or did he get the boot?
I think he got the boot. I think he's with his brother. I mean, but like, why did he do it? Maybe because he felt like the time was running out and he needed to get rid of the cash. Maybe he felt like his wife being a celebrity actually protected him against ever being held accountable. He bought every judge. He bought the bar. He bought fellow lawyers so that people couldn't get second counsel.
I just thought of something.
I think
he bought it.
That, like, she...
He bought it to launder it. He laundered it because he gave it to her
as
a gift. He gave it to her as a gift. So they can't sue. I think he thought they weren't going to be able to sue her for it. They gave it to her as a gift. There's been
on camera.
There are people. There was this like one. He's like a mini Bernie Madoff. And I think he was like he was in some country. I think like either Brazil or Colombia. And he had ripped off a bunch of people at this one bank. And he bought tons of paintings like Lichtensteins and, you know, Picasso's. And he invested all in that and he had them shipped to America. And that was his nest egg that he had keep over there so that when he was going to flee the country, finally, he would have that money. He ended up getting arrested. And then Department of Homeland Security actually confiscated all the paintings and return them so that the money so it could be sold and the money could be returned to the victim. So like, but for him to like buy it and then give it as a gift, because you know she didn't give a fuck about that painting.
No, she said it. It was an LOL that like you didn't do this for me. You did it for yourself. That was literally a part of the presentation of the episode.
Mm-hmm. So he did that. That was a calculation on his part for sure. And I think that she kind of knew that. I think she knew.
I could see him thinking, it helps that my wife is on the show because I can say that these lawsuits are all frivolous and just happening because my wife is on the show. And mm-hmm. yet, because his wife is on the show, he needs to keep feeding the beast in the sense of making her look like they are never going to run out of cash, which could maybe also support the idea that he has so much money. Why would he steal other people's? Mm-hmm. There are, when we talk about complicity or enabling, I think one could make the argument that Erica's continued appearance and characterization on Beverly Hills helped feed his defense until he just honestly ran out of time.
I'm curious if we're going to find out that, like, he gave a lot of money, like, just cash to women. Like, there may have been, like, I know someone personally who was extorted by a hooker, and she, like, threatened to tell his family, and he had to give her, like, $2 million. And then he finally came clean with his wife because he, like, couldn't, he needed to sell another one of his properties. He's not a friend of mine. I'll just have you know. He was someone that... I
have
knew
him slide into my DMs.
Stuff.
I hate to say it, but
you wouldn't want it. I'm telling you.
Okay. I mean, maybe I would. ask me again after that Chanel. Continuing on.
So, you know, what if, like, if there were these other women, like, maybe there was some of that. Like, Tom was just giving away heaps of cash to other ladies. I mean, because it just doesn't make. That's the other thing is, like, it doesn't really make sense that he had had so much money before. And then was stealing from these victims. Like, did he have a bad investment? Was it they were just living so far above their means? I mean, Erica's shit is, like, extremely extravagant. But they did kind of, like, make it seem like they could afford to do that.
I think it's because he had been stealing for so long that, like, any Ponzi scheme, it was just you were stealing from Peter to pay Paul or whatever the fuck the phrase goes. Like, I think he had just been doing this for so all of the information that we have been given, aside from the narrative that Erica is sharing, or maybe also because of the narrative that Erica is sharing, which is eerily similar to the ones being said by Tom's team.
Yep.
Is that this had been going on for a while. I think he was in a cycle where he was having to pay out some of these claims. And in order to do that, plus support his lifestyle, he was continuing to thieve.
It's just so weird, though, because the amounts that he was winning were huge. I mean, like, record numbers, hundreds of millions of dollars per case. So, I mean, like, that $12 million burn case was a bit small potatoes for him. So that's why I'm like, how? I mean, I guess part of it may have been all the divorces. That's possible. Mm-hmm. Those are mm-hmm. costly.
In California.
Yeah.
Too. We're
she
community
left
property.
Him. She should have left him.
Do you think that the divorce is real? That the narrative around the... Well, two questions. The divorce is real and the narrative around the divorce? What are your thoughts?
No.
Mm-mm. At all?
No, I don't think it's real at all. And I think that that the reason why she got so mad at Garcelle sharing that Tom mm-hmm. calls her every day is because I think she talks to Tom every day. I think that...
You do?
I do. I think she talks to Tom every day. I think that they are in cahoots. I really do. I mean, that's just my opinion, but I think that... it just all is too weird. The story about the car is too weird. Why is Erica telling the same stories that his lawyers are telling?
Yeah, that's you know? Real rough.
Why did she deny that there was infidelity and then, like, a week later release these old-ass text messages? Like, she denied infidelity, like, completely to Garcelle, who has dealt with that in her own life. So, you know, why would she only released those text messages when people started saying that the divorce is fake? She wasn't going to go there.
There were two moments from the episode that made me super, like, my hairs were raising out of my, in every possible way, spiritually and otherwise. When Garcelle said, fuck Tom, because mm-hmm. Kyle's, it's not even about Kyle, although Kyle's face was like, oh my God. the idea that we have not seen that once from Erica, when it would ostensibly help her so much, at least on the show, mm-hmm. is fascinating. We have not seen that. We haven't seen it a single time. That was, to me, kind of honestly unbelievable. And the mm-hmm. other moment where I was like, what the fuck, is when Garcelle, again, put her in her place and was like, you are going to be absolutely fine, which is when I literally thought I was going to die in that moment. I was like, holy shit. And also, it's about the victims. And Erica's response, which to me was very coached. I think Erica knew about the meeting because Lisa Rinna told her. And Lisa Rinna told her everyone is concerned about the victims. So for the absolute very first time that we have seen on camera, Erica said the victims are number one. Mm-hmm. I did not believe her for a single second in that moment. And I was actually shaken by how little I believed.
Yeah. If the victims are number one, then give them
money.
Money, yeah. Like, I mean, her downsizing is still ridiculous. Her downsizing, she's still in a 3-bedroom house with a pool and a jacuzzi. Yeah. I mean, that's like a mansion to a lot of people, you know? Like, that's a big fucking house. It's not like their old house, but she still has a lot. She has a lot.
And the other part of this is she really, truly tried to shame and mock and humiliate Sutton
yeah.
for taking this as seriously as Sutton is. And as recently as this week, Ronald Richards, who is a conversation, frankly, for another day, said that he plans to, like, subpoena, interview, whatever the language is, these women about the things mm-hmm. that they say on camera. He even specifically called out Lisa Rinna herself, which to me is like a little cringe. It does sort of, there's a level of oddity to the ways that we receive this information very publicly that makes it feel like a little bit of a circus. But also, Sutton was exactly right
yes.
to seek legal counsel and to make fun of her for that. I wonder if Rinna is sliding into her lawyer's DMs.
Absolutely, because Kyle also, like, they weren't the only, like, mm-hmm. I think that Dorit knows exactly what's up, but she just doesn't want to rock the boat. I think that she doesn't want Rinna coming for her. Mm-hmm. So she's just, like, kind of changing her tune, but I think she knows exactly what's up. So, Judy, come here.
Oh, oh my God, it's Rinna.
So I think that, you know, yeah. And for Sutton, oh, you know what? Actually, on, I never really watched this show, but for some reason it was just like on because of the recording that I had of Beverly Hills. It was that girl chat or girl talk, whatever is it? That
chat.
Yeah. And it was Giselle and Portia and Brandy Glanville. And Giselle mm-hmm. was actually like, I know exactly what Sutton is talking about. Sutton was totally right. She's talking about how she's going to be asked about this a million and one times by people in the press. She's going to have to end up talking about it. And it's going to be really annoying. She's like, that happened to me a bunch of times with people's drama on the show. Mm-hmm. And she's like, and of course she's going to want to talk to you, get like legal counsel for that. And that's true. And it's like, those are the kinds of like fights that they can't really say because they're on the mm-hmm. show, which is what Giselle said. She's like, you can't really say that because you're on the show, but that's, you know, what it is.
Yeah. And as we've seen, even not even discussing it with the press, but how you talk about this on the show, people are watching. Like,
yeah.
This is a big fucking case and a big deal. And Erica is trying to both gain sympathy about her positioning in it and also shame people from mm-hmm. saying what is happening is happening. I mean, you know, the LA Times is not Radar Online, and
that's
Radar Online,
Kyle said, she's like, this isn't like right? this isn't like some tabloid.
It's not, and tabloids aren't always wrong, but like it is wild to me. I think some of this is coming from a guttural fear, which is going to fuck her because Ronald Richards wants to bury her. Genuinely, the idea that she's saying, I don't find out about things before they drop on the press. I was like, you are going to regret that sentence.
Yeah.
And I don't know that she had any other. I think she would have been fucked either way, because the positioning and the narrative that she has put about is not served well for her by the truth. So I felt like in the moment she had no choice but to lie, but that lie is going to come back and kick her in the fucking ass, because there are ways to find the records of when she was served. Like, and it happened before these scenes were filmed. Like, that's not a benefit to her. It's not.
The thing is that in the LA Times article, which Rinna and Kyle, for some weird reason, didn't read. I mean, I devoured that thing. Like, the minute it dropped, I was like, oh, my God. It says in there that they reached out to them for comment and they declined to comment. So when you reach out for comment, because also, like, a newspaper, you have to do that as a journalist. Like, you have to go and get the other person's side or their comment. And sometimes you have to even just present things to them in a fact-checking sense. Like, you be like, oh, is this true? Is this true? And then some people will, like, either say, yes, it's true, or no, it's not true. And then some people will just be like, take the fifth, you know? And it sounds like they took the fifth. But, like, they were contacted about this, and that was probably, like, at least a week before it dropped. So she knew. She absolutely knew it was coming. And they would have known exactly what kind of stuff was in it by the questions that were given.
And yet she decided in the moment to be like, I had no idea. These things that are
bullshit.
Very easy to rebut. However, Kyle and Rinna, I think, are making the choice to not allow themselves to take in and process new information that can maybe lead them or force them to change their mind about their friend. I honestly wouldn't put Kyle in that bucket. I would 1000% put Lisa Rinna there. And I think Dorit is trying to convince herself she doesn't know this stuff in real time, which is fascinating. Like, Rinna doesn't want to know anything so that she can
this
is absolutely wrong
with them, with her still. And my question is, what has she given back to you friendship wise? What has she given to you? Like, she took you for a ride in her Lamborghini that she didn't own. Mm-hmm. Like, what did she, what kind of, like, support has she been there for you? Does she talk to you when you're not filming? Does she only speak to you when you're filming? You know, did she, even the Christmas card that she sent to Lisa Rinna? No, I'm sorry, the grief, what do you call it when someone,
a sympathy card. Lisa Vanderpump?
A sympathy card.
Yeah, she took a photo of.
That's cold. She's a cold person. I don't know what they're getting. I don't really know what Rinna is getting out of this friendship-wise. I don't. So,
I mean, she's getting protection. I think that Kiki said this, I think, the talk of shame on our last episode, it might have been Bravo, Bravo, Ducking Bravo, but, like, these women are afraid of Erica and, to an extent, Kathy in a different way, but, like, Kathy, they're afraid of the truth. Erica,
God,
they're afraid
Kathy's
of being chewed
great.
Apart. Oh my God,
yeah.
Queen of everything.
Oh my God, but, and she's like, well, it's good practice.
There was a look when Kathy was like a couple martinis deep, and those were not fake this time. She was like bottomings up for real. Where Kathy's face, there was like some sort of, the camera turned to her, and she was just processing more the alcohol than the truth, and it was just absolute bliss. It was television.
But
excellence.
She knows. Kathy also knows, and Kathy, because Kathy immediately was like, "I don't know her." Meanwhile, she's been on vacation with her to, like, Big Sur, right? And and La Quinta. She doesn't not know her. Like, they've socialized.
I mean, but she doesn't know her. I think Kathy socializes with a lot of people that she doesn't necessarily know. It was the most honest thing, because these women should also say, I don't know her. Because it turns out you maybe don't. You maybe saw a version of her, but it's not the entirety of her. And what's happening now is
I think that's what Dorit is kind of, that's like where she is.
And I think it's also the conflict of the idea that the person that you thought you knew is broader. The picture of Erica Jane is broader than the one that was presented initially or the one that you've always believed. Doesn't mean the old one was a complete lie. Doesn't mean this one is the absolute truth. But I think the reality lands somewhere in the middle. And that is something that when it comes to like the Lisa Rinna cycle, it's going to be very difficult for her to come through this unscathed, because you are gaslighting us from this second half of her, which mm-hmm. happens to be for many reasons, possibly the most important. You're pretending that yeah. this is a lie or doesn't matter. And that's not really the conversation that everyone else wants to have.
Yeah. I mean, and they all seem like they're good with her now. Oh, but you know what's very weird?
Tell is
that
everything.
They all seem like they're good with her on social media, because like Garcelle, like I think mm-hmm. did like a happy birthday wishes to Erica or whatever kind of recently. And then but Rinna, after 2 weeks ago, the episode from 2 weeks ago, Rinna was like posted something in her stories and then almost immediately deleted it. But she was like, mm-hmm. funny how they didn't show Erica screaming at producers. So like, what was that? Was she trying to tell tales out of school, or what was that about?
She was trying to fuck with production. She was trying to say that production lied to her or misrepresented to Erica how the whole thing about the Tom's calls were going to be had. And so Erica mm-hmm. had a meltdown about it. So I initially was like, oh my God, Lisa Rinna's coming to the truth. And then I was like, nope, this is just, she's doing a Kim Kardashian Snapchat moment, which was like super disappointing. Do you think that Rinna's going to come out of this unscathed? How does Rinna, is Rinna ever going to un-Rinna herself? Like, what's the conclusion here?
No, she always seems to get away with it. She always seems to skate by. She's always, you know, she has been clinging onto fame with her nails for decades now, and has, you know, managed to still stay in the spotlight, and she'll do anything it takes, including using her daughter as a storyline, including supporting and making jokes about her daughter dating a 38-year-old man with 3 children who's been in and out of rehab. She will do anything. She'll do anything. So.
And she takes a lot of joy out of the Erica. It's like, if we're going to criticize Erica for not showing sympathy, Lisa Rinna is right behind. Like, when it comes to the lack of empathy or understanding, both for her other co-stars to try to betray them for feeling upset is like crime number one. And crime number two is just her general narrative, which is
really.
Why
did she give Denise such a hard time for, like, you know,
stripping,
getting a little,
whatever,
you know, sapphic or whatever. Like, why didn't she like give her the hard time about like having sex with Brandy? And then even like when Denise was denying it, like, yeah, Denise didn't want to say that shit on camera because her kids were going to see it. And she had no idea. Brandy's not on the show. She had no idea that was going to come out. So Rinna was a real ass for doing that.
And she constantly references it, and she thinks she's doing it as a part of her own accountability arc or like forgiveness for me narrative. And it sucks. I think the other part of the episode that really I was like, shut the fuck up, is Teddy Mellencamp, who was there for absolutely no reason aside from protecting Erica. And I can understand that, but I still was like, you weren't hired back. This is a very important scene. You are helping protect her in ways that stifling conversation. And the idea that we won't ever know is not reason enough to stop the conversation. So shut the fuck up.
Oh my God. When Garcelle was like, Teddy's annoying.
I mean, Yeah,
exactly. Nail on the head.
She is a gnat, because I'm fucking bugging out when I see her at that fucking dinner. Like, what are you doing there? Don't you have carrots to steal from people who pay you hundreds of dollars a month for your disordered eating factory? Is that a not enough money for you? Like, can we get all out of this? Can I tag myself out of the Teddy Mellencamp game? Because she, you know, she blocked me on social after I asked her about carrots. So I don't even know.
Why didn't you just mute you? When you block someone, it's like, you know, letting them know that you that they bothered you.
I just hit mute. I mean, I guess she was holding me accountable for asking about a vegetable. Listen, you know I die for you. You know I'm obsessed with you. I could talk to you about Beverly Hills and New York, technically. We're in the city. That should be enough. Can you tell the people how to follow you online, listen to Pod Psychology and more?
Yeah, you can find Pot Psychology wherever you listen to podcasts. I am at Tracy Morrissey, Tracy with an IE, on everything. And also, I have a website where I sell a curation of smoking accessories. So there's like bongs and things. But I also have something that I call corporate swag, which is when I take, you know, logos from corporations and organizations in some of our favorite movies and put them on a mug, like something maybe that someone in that movie would have received, or a sweatshirt. So I have stuff from Troop Beverly Hills and Working Girl and Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead and Big Business. So you can check that out at pipedreams.fun. And for Andy's Girls listeners, a 10% discount if you just type in AG2021.
Oh my God, I'm going to do that because I've had my eye on the Trask Industries mug and you have that pink sweatshirt. I want the Lena Dunham one, but there's another one too that I'm super into.
What is it?
Oh my God, I forget. But guys, I'm going to include the discount code in the show notes for this episode and a link to purchase. And cool. I myself, just so you guys are aware, it will be procuring myself at Trask Industries because one of the best movies of all time. Guys, while you're handing over some cash for a reason and celebrating that fantastic idea, which I will be doing as well, join the Andy's Girls Patreon. It's the number one way to support the podcast. You get exclusive bonus episodes and invites to special events and more. Patreon.com/Andy's Girls. New episode up now with bonus satchels of gold and some inside scoop on episodes and so much. And P.S. you are going to want to follow me on social media trust every day, but specifically this week. You're going to want to follow me on Wednesday at Dame Galley on Instagram. That's all I'm going to say for now. Trust me, you're going to want to see my Instagram stories. So do that. Instagram at Dame Galley, Tracy Morrissey. Oh my God. Listen, it's not a B. I can't stop making B humor. An A++ conversation. Aww. Guys, follow Tracy while you're following me on Instagram. Hope everybody's staying safe, staying sane, getting vaccinated if you can, and we will talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.